Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. You've had enough staying home. You've had enough confinement. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds. Like the breathable, silky smooth tree runner, the responsive foam and extra grip of the tree dasher, or the classic low-top look of the tree piper. Allbirds has a shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Whether you're traveling to the ends of the earth or settling in for a staycation, you need a shoe that's versatile enough to go with any outfit, durable enough to wear over any terrain, and lightweight enough to make packing a breeze. Being made from insanely comfortable, breezy eucalyptus fiber is a plus, too. When you wear Allbirds travel shoes, you're in vacation mode before you even leave the house. They're the only shoes your suitcase needs. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair of tree dashers, runners, pipers, and more at allbirds.com. That's allbirds.com.
Hi everybody, welcome to The Ruck. This week it's only Wales versus England at Cardiff, one of the most eagerly awaited games of this or indeed any other season. Also, France are eagerly awaited. Just wonder what's going on in the French camp as we speak. Are the team and coach fighting each other? In the wake of the fact that Morgan Parra and Camille Lopez, only the halfbacks, French halfbacks, spoke out against the dismal coaching that Jacques Brunel's coming up with. So a little bit of a sad soap opera there. But Wales, England, also Ireland, Italy. It's week three, series three of the Six Nations. Now, you'd expect us to have a massive panel of great shit today, and that's exactly what we got. Laurence Dallaglio, axed. Michael Leiner, not famous enough. Owen Slott, looks like a mad professor. Andy Good, still doing his diploma of journalism course on O-level English. What the people we have got? Mark Evans. Now, if your club has poor crowds, struggling with your bank balance, or indeed if you want to transplant a sport from one country to another or invent a new sport, Mark's the man to do it for you. Mark, have you taken on any sport since you were last on?
No, I'm trying to narrow down my focus.
Okay, but you're still on with the 12 sports that you're in charge of?
Something of that order.
Okay, well, bog snorkeling he's not doing, but all the others he is. And incidentally, I don't want to big him up too much, but if you want the chief executive for your club, there's no man better. Steve James is with us, rugby and cricket writer for The Times. And just for the record, whenever Steve comes on, there's always a lot of giggling about his treble century at Colwyn Bay in August 2000. I was at a function with Steve in Cardiff recently, and when it came up that he'd got 309 at Colwyn Bay, some people were almost giggling and jeering, which I thought was completely out of order.
That was you.
Because, no, it wasn't, because, okay, Steve is not famous for a fusillade of sixes, but for God's sake, 300, three centuries in one innings at Colwyn Bay is absolutely remarkable.
12 hours.
And as a feat of concentration, he went in August 2000 and he was out on December the 3rd. But we must stop making fun of the treble century. We've got Alex Lowe from The Times, one of the great all-rounders. You want news stories, you want features, you want interviews, you want snippets, you want insight, match reports. This is the man, the go-to man in The Times. Recently, last week, Alex was comparing Tom Curry, the young teenager. Is he still a teenager?
No, he's just 20.
Okay, the 20-year-old flanker with the great Neil Back. He also wrote the following. Ireland and France took 6 seconds to recycle the ball in almost a quarter of the rucks. God knows what that means. But we're trying to keep him off the statistics. Anyway, there we go. Alex, we'll come to you first.
Thank you.
Not for a stat, but England, England squad or England team, is there only the loose head prop position to be settled?
I think so. Chris Ashton pulled out of the game on Sunday with a calf injury. Jack Noel almost certainly come back into the starting team in his place. England will be excited that Joe Cockenessing is available and fit and scoring, and I can see him having a role to play in Cardiff because Eddie Jones is just a huge fan of his power, really. Otherwise, yeah, loose head, and it's a choice between two opposites, really, Ben Moon or Ellis Genge. And as we sit here on a Monday, I think they'll edge towards Ben Moon with Carl Sinclair at tight head, and they could almost do a swap when Sinclair burns himself out. They could replace both props and bring on Genge, and they've actually, although he's on the other side, it'd be a like for like, sort of very very similar style and attitude and sort of raw physicality. So yeah, at the moment I think it's only one position up for grabs, because I think Noel will start.
Does this now suggest that, I mean, whenever there's been an Eddie Jones team announcement over the years, you couldn't name more than six of them, but does that suggest now that Eddie's settled down and the team has settled down?
Yes, in a lot of ways. I think they found, certainly in the last two games, that they found a way they want to play. I think Henry Slade has become really important in their attacking structure. Daly is bedding in much more at fullback, but because they've been on the front foot for two games, you've seen the best of him. Mm. And the injuries that they've had have been in positions with decent cover. Loosehead is slightly weaker, but they'll start Moon or Genge. Most countries in the Six Nations would be happy with that option. They lose Maro Itoje, but in comes Courtney Laws, who's just in phenomenal form. Yeah. They lose Chris Ashton, and they've got Jack Noel. So I think at the moment, in years gone by, England's depth has been really tested by injury. They were down. I mean, Ben Moon only got his chance because they were down to fifth, sixth Loosehead at the time. So they've got a decent injury record at the moment, particularly in the positions where they're strong. So, sure. I think they know what they're trying to do. I'm sure they'll change it up a bit from the France game, and they've got good options in all those positions.
I wouldn't touch Ellis this week with a barge pole. I think it'd be so easy for Wales to wind up, and to be wound up by the atmosphere. I go with Moon. I think it's tremendous. Steve, the selection issue, as was expressed in Sam Warburton's comment on the weekend, I'm interested to hear what you think of it. This season, people have been, the general cognoscenti, is that the right word, have been saying that Anscombe is now the better player and that Thomas Williams is coming through strongly. Dan Biggar and Gareth Davis, in my opinion, fierce players and big match players, test match animals. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Obviously, Biggar's fitness is the first consideration. Limped off for Northampton on Saturday. Presuming he's fit, I've got a feeling Wales will go with Anscombe at 10 and then Biggar to come off the bench. That actually worked quite well in the autumn, especially against Australia, when Anscombe did quite well at the start and then Biggar really closed that game out. The scrum half, I mean, if Gareth Davis plays, that'll be a third different scrum half Wales have had in the championship this year, which, you know, Thomas Williams started against France, then Ali Davis started against Italy. But I think they'll probably go with Gareth Davis just because he's the big match player. There are a few other marginal calls as well that Gatland's got to make. Second row being one of them. Who's going to partner Alan Wynne-Jones? Sam Warburton went for Jake Ball, but Adam Beard has done okay, and they seem to quite like him. He's a big lump, isn't he? And there's obviously Corey Hill as well. I'd go with Jake Ball as well, I think.
So would I.
I think they need another carrier there. Yeah. And Loosehead Prop's another one as well. Do they go with Nicky Smith or Rob Evans? And I think they'll go with Nicky Smith just because he's so good over the ball. I think Wales have really got to challenge England at the breakdown. England have not been challenged at that breakdown over there in those first two games. So
agreed.
I think that's somewhere where Wales will really challenge them.
Okay, that's just a selection dilemma. Mark, we both know that this game has been loaded with other stuff since time immemorial. Mm. It's small country, big country, heroic Wales against the upper-class twits, etc. Does it still carry some of that? And also, how big is it in terms of rugby?
It'll always carry a bit of that because sport's full of these big, big country, big club, little club. You know, the FA Cup's got 100 years of history almost around that very idea. However, when you look at it now, there's still a difference. You know, the difference is still in most parts of England, not all. Rugby is played in a certain class. Whereas in Wales, didn't matter. It doesn't matter what social class you're from. The problem in Wales is actually not as many people are playing it as used to be. That's a different issue. The other thing that's changed about the England team is the multiracial nature of it. Mm. And if you look at the England team now, and I, you know, you could say this is more a sort of accident of migration rather than there's players from a sort of a non-white background playing it. But you look through the team, and you know it does look like a bit more like modern England than it used to. So I think those, it's not quite as clear cut as it used to be, but it's still there. And there's still a great thing about, you know, the cultural importance of rugby to Wales is probably, even though the sport isn't as strong, culturally it probably is as strong as it's ever been. In fact, some would argue that is part of the problem of the sport in Wales. But again, that's a separate issue.
Okay. But the significance of the match itself, leave aside all the trappings, yeah. It does really... one of the teams is going to be very disappointed. The other one is probably going to win a Grand Slam.
So, I think if England win, they'll win the Grand Slam. I'm not sure Wales will. Wales aren't playing very well.
No.
They're really not. And, you know, I read Stuart Barnes' piece, this one, and he's right. I hate to say it, but he's absolutely spot on.
Let's not go on.
you know, that 11-match run is actually... very misleading. There aren't many really significant victories in that run. And Australia are probably on their worst run since the 70s, frankly. The fact that Wales had lost 13 times in a row meant it was significant. But, you know...
Which is exactly the point Eddie Jones was actually making after the England-France game, where he kept saying in every interview he could... I'm told this is the best Welsh team of all time.
He doesn't mean it.
Of course not. Of course, he meant exactly the opposite, that they've done nothing to prove it.
You know, in the same way that the English team that won 18 on the trot were not the best English team of all time. I mean, it's a nice shorthand way of getting something across. I get that. But it doesn't actually amount to a hill of beans, really. It's nonsense.
Steve, you mentioned the three scrum halves. Has Warren got it right? In the sense that, okay, they win away in France. It doesn't matter how you play, they win away. It didn't matter if they were shocking. Against Italy, why didn't he keep the pot boiling, maybe a couple of changes? Why would he make 10 changes?
Yeah, I think afterwards he admitted he probably had got that wrong because there was such a lack of cohesion. I think he basically said in the press conference he would have liked to probably kept a few more from that French game in the starting lineup. But I don't know, sometimes with Gatland, you suspect he might have something up his sleeve, you know. He obviously wanted to rest the big guns, didn't he, for this England game. He's been looking ahead to this England game as being the big one. But yeah, I see what you're saying, and that is my concern about Wales. Is it going to be too big a leap for them to go from where they have been in terms of their performances to producing the sort of performance that's going to beat England? Because, you know, it's going to have to be, you know, one of the best Wales performances for a long time, probably since 2013, if they are to win this game.
And just on that performance in Italy, I think we say it every year, but if you beat Italy and you want a challenge for the title, you need a bonus point. And if Mark's scenario pans out, if Wales beat England, they then host Ireland on the last day. If they beat England but don't win the Grand Slam, it's quite feasible they could then miss out on a title because of a bonus point they didn't push through and get.
I think they're set up for that. I do.
What, not win the title because of lost bonus points?
Not win the title. You know, I mean, frankly, you know, you've won it. You know, you've won the championship. You've beaten the big teams in it. You know,
the tournament almost needs a Wales win, doesn't it? Because if England win, the tournament's over.
Tournament is over. Yeah. Well, we'll put that to Eddie Jones.
It's right though, isn't it? They're not going to lose to Scotland. When was the last time Scotland won it?
Italy and Scotland.
1983 or something.
We'll come to your predictions in a minute. But Alex, you wrote that the kicking is still going to be a big deal. But Johan Huge is not the fullback anymore. In fact, he wasn't the fullback last week either. He just had a 15 jersey on. And the two shocking wings who were actually centres not there. Do you still think there's going to be a lot of kicking?
Oh, absolutely. England won't go into it with... They don't have a set game plan, which is one of the things I've been very impressed with them about so far. This time last year, they were playing dull rugby. They were not smart, not intelligent. They were struggling at the breakdown, and yet they would send one man in on his own with no support, and then wonder why Bastereau suddenly ends up being man of the match, because they run straight into him, and it was careless, and it was dull. England have been smart, and I think that kicking was always going to be an important part of their game against France. But because France couldn't see what was happening to them, they just kept on doing it. Mm-hmm. It will be very different against Wales because, A, Wales have a fullback. If Lee Halfpenny was fit, they'd have had probably the best fullback in terms of covering the backfield and marking that space to allow Wales to defend with a big high-pressure line with 13 or 14 men. Liam Williams is not quite Halfpenny, but he's a fullback by trade, and he's as close to a decent understudy as they'll get.
But he's also he's tough and physical. He doesn't look like it, but he's unbelievably physical.
Absolutely. So England will kick because it's part of their armory now. And George Ford talked about it pre-tournament that particularly when you're up against a defensive line like Sean Edwards, where they want to be in your face, if you can shift the ball and kick in behind, there is space. And if you've got the pace of a Johnny Mayer, then they will do it, but they'll have to be more intelligent about it.
On the flip side of that, I think Wales will kick a lot as well.
I think they will too.
Yeah, I do too.
Because
it's a modern game.
But England's line speed has been so fast.
It's been so good.
Yeah. I mean, they've just going up and smashing people.
I mean, I don't.
Do you mean this? Do you mean kick high, kick short, or
they'll do a
lot.
The whole lot, I think.
Okay. I think the very best teams in the world at the moment are kicking a lot. Mm. The All Blacks have kicked a lot for a long time. I mean, we've marked on that, but it's what's happening in rugby league as well, because you've got the defensive line in their game. You know, it's at the play of the ball, you know, 10 metres apart, 11 or 12 men up, and there's very little space, and the tackling's very good, and defence is very well organised. So what happens now in modern rugby league is you push the ball in behind, or you put it up in the air into the dead ball area for a contest. You've got to. It's just like rugby union's, just so similar. And now England have got a really nice kicking balance because they've got two right-footed kickers and two left. And this is real old school. You know, this is like going back to Paul Dodge and stuff. But in the modern game, to be able to kick both sides of the park on your natural foot within your team is incredibly helpful. So England can now go, we can kick past left, we can kick past right, we can push it, and all the other really good teams can do. And that's when Henry Slade becomes such a key player again. My personal view is he should have been in the team. He should have 60, 70 caps by now. I've never understood why he hasn't been an absolute fixture, but he is now.
I think the chase is also really important. You talked there, Mark, about the different styles of kicks used in rugby league. Twice England have kicked to compete, and their chase has been so good. They've won the knockdown either through the pressure, forcing the knock on, or they've got a hand to it. And the moment they scoop it up, they then kick again through on the ground into the now vacant backfield. And Jones, you say, will they kick high or will they kick short? It's the variety of the attacking kicks and the different positions in which you can now execute that kick.
Two critical tactical areas of the modern game are the kicking game and the line out from that. If your line-out doesn't function, because you're going to lose some of the high balls if they're put on the money, and you're going to take some under a lot of pressure. If you can't win your own line-out ball, and Wales's line-out this season has been really average.
I think for that reason, Wales will just try and keep the ball on the field. I don't think they'll look to kick it off at all.
No, they won't, and that'll go back to Warren Gatland, Wasps 2002, where they never used to kick the ball off the park at all. He's always like keeping
Steve,
it on the park.
Steve, have they got another problem, though? Let's just deal with the line, and so we'll deal with the sheer power of the England carriers. Now Sinclair's come through not only as a powerful carrier, but also times his runs absolutely beautifully. Yeah. Jamie George has come through as a carrier. Billy Vunipola has got a game under his belt. Courtney Laws, we know, is a brilliant carrier. I don't see where Wales compare here because...
I was just about to say that.
Alan Wynn is a carrier. Jake Ball, definitely a carrier. Paul Moriarty's son, Ross Moriarty. But have they got as many?
Do you know who Wales's best carrier is at the moment and who they use a lot?
Navidi.
No, Josh Adams on the wing.
Like Jack Noel does the same role.
I mean, they struggle for big carriers. And that's one of the reasons why they're going to have to kick a lot.
If I was picking the team, I'd pick Wainwright. I think Wales are going to pick Tuparik and Navidi. And if you don't win enough collisions, it doesn't matter how good you are on the floor.
As I said earlier, I think they'll see the breakdown as one area where they can win this game.
But if you don't win, my point is, if you don't win a collision, it doesn't matter how many ground men you've got.
I think they'll be physical enough in defence. I do worry about the carrying.
I think I wrote in the paper yesterday that I'm sorry, but I would leave out the man who's become who's been the man of the match for the first two games.
Yeah, but who would you play instead of Navidi?
Wainwright, because Wainwright is a line-out option.
Yeah.
I mean, he's I'm not saying he's confidence because he's a big lad, but he's very, very young, you know, and he's
like Curry.
Well, absolutely, yeah. But, I mean, Kerry comes from a reasonable club. Well, they were reasonable till Saturday. Whereas I doubt if Wainwright's been on the winning side this year. Anyway, but...
He's a promising young player.
He is. Yeah. But, I mean, I would like Tipperick, Paul Moriarty's son, Ross, and...
Let it go, Steve.
Okay, sorry. All right. So and it's just got the little thing.
Steve, the only thing I'll say about that carrying business is 2 years ago in Cardiff, Jake Ball and Ross Moriarty had their best games for Wales by some considerable distance. I mean, they carried ferociously in that game. So, I mean, Wales will be hoping they can do the same on Saturday.
That's why, despite everything, I think it'll be a matchstick in it. I think it'll be a lot closer than people think. But
England have not been challenged yet in those two games.
No, I agree.
And I think Wales will challenge them
a lot.
And
that's another reason I pick bigger. Because in the first two games, England have got off to an absolute rip-roaring start. And there are certain types of teams you don't want to be chasing. You've got to get them into an arm wrestle. And so far, no one's been able to get England into an arm wrestle. The game is completely different if it's 6-3 or 10-7 after half an hour. And to do that, your defence has got to turn up.
Alex, can I just ask you as a former prop? England, we've criticised them for a long time because their front row's never been authoritative enough and have given away so many penalties. It isn't true. Now they seem to have a decent scrummaging unit. In which Sinclair and Jamie George are two different are the two new factors. You must be really happy. Well, that part, let's say Eddie Jones must be really happy with the way that Sinclair's come through.
Oh, absolutely. Before last year's Six Nations, Eddie Jones said Dan Cole will end this championship as the best tight head in the world. He ended it on the bench and then didn't play again because Eddie Jones realised that while he might be technically a better scrummager than Harry Williams and Carl Sinclair. He was way off in the other areas of the game. And you see how you just see how Ty Furlong plays. You see how Mako Vunipola plays. And now you're seeing how Carl Sinclair fits into that same mould. And it's his carrying is huge. Eddie Jones will love his attitude. He'll want him to stay just the right side of that yellow card, but he'll love that snarliness about him.
And anyway, every prop should be from Batsy Ironside.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the point you're making about the scrums is critical because, and partly that's the game. Again, I hate to throw. I know I love my stats, but you know, in the 1980s in the Six Nations, they were averaging 38 scrums a game. Right now, there are 12, and in some games there are less than double figures. Now you ain't gonna be that bright to work out that therefore and look, a dominant scrum's still very, very helpful, but England haven't got a dominant scrum, but nobody pushes them around. And that's the difference. It's stable, it's a platform. And if you can get that from someone like Carl Sinclair, who's gone from being an impact player to a starter, you get all those tips and stuff that he's a really good ball player.
I think it'd be fairly even at the scrummage, wouldn't it? Wales' scrummage actually went okay in France. I think they'll pick Thomas Francis at tight head purely for his scrummaging. So I think that'll be a fairly even contest.
I'm interested in what, going back to that event that you talked about in Cardiff with Sam Warburton was there too, and he made a point about the Welsh props as an area that would be... A weakness would be the wrong word. I'm trying to remember how he phrased it, but he basically said they haven't had a Lions standard prop in too long, and that could be an area that England looks at.
He actually said that they've never replaced Gethin Jenkins and Adam Jones, which is what I thought was significant. Boys, let's just go on to Scotland, France, Scotland in Paris, which is an incredibly fascinating game, really, because if France lose, God knows where the hell they go there. If Scotland lose, Scotland is suddenly back in the wooden spoon territory again. Steve, I was going to say, where can France go? Is there anywhere they can go this week apart from being more passionate?
But I mean, the thing to say is, I was in Paris for that first game. They played really well in that first half. I mean, you can say Wales weren't great, but some of the stuff France played in that first half, in the conditions, some of the offloading, the handling. I mean, and Parra really took control at scrum half in that.
that half. I mean, they looked good there. I mean, they obviously imploded second half, and then they were totally shambolic at Twickenham. But, you know, I think there is something to hold on to, because I was really impressed by them in that first half. But, okay, yeah, they need to pick a fullback. I mean, that's the worst performance I've ever seen at any level, I think, positionally.
Well, fullback.
From a fullback. Mm. In terms of his positioning, I mean, it was almost like he was saying, look, you pick me a fullback, but I don't really want to play that. I'm going to stay on the wing.
And also, I'm not going to encourage my two wings to have any part of it.
No,
worst French team you've seen, Mark?
Ooh, that's quite a high bar, isn't it? They've had some shockers. Go back to the 1930s and 40s.
Oh, my God, hang on.
But
it's only a podcast. We don't want to go into depth.
Didn't win a championship until 58.
It's the stats today, isn't it?
Well, you know, just I'm a bit of a nose, I know.
Brilliant.
Look, they were terrible. Yes, and probably the worst, one of the worst of a number of very, very poor performances in the last however many years. But they have got, I don't quite see where they go. I think this game shows up the two big things about international rugby. What are the two big factors? One is availability. Scotland have got a list of unavailable players. I read it, wrote it down. You know, it's just extraordinary. And if Finn Russell's not fit, that WP Nell, Richie Gray, Stuart Hogg, if it's Russell, Watson, but Duncan Taylor. Remember how well he was playing?
Now, skin.
And they haven't got a player base like England and France to absorb that. Hugh Jones is out. There are others too, Denton and Wilson and Hardy and Skinner. I'm holding judgment on Scotland because I think there's a good Scotland side for the World Cup, but it won't be playing this Six Nations, which makes it tricky.
Okay.
The other thing is selection, and the French selection has just been dreadful. Not only are they picking people in the wrong position, there's no consistency of selection either. I don't think there's as much wrong with French rugby as some people think. I think it's been terribly selected and terribly coached. And some of the changes they brought in about 2016 will make a difference in the medium run, but not this year.
OK, Alex, the Scots, it is a heck of an injury quotient, but wasn't the Ireland game the one they had to win? Because it was a home game, Ireland didn't play at all well, and yet Scotland didn't take the chance in a dreadful game. But wasn't that the one they should have won?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, they will. I think pre-tournament, though, when we thought Ireland were going to be coming in all guns blazing, no one would have expected Scotland to win that. But I think they will regret not playing better. The unavailabilities don't help. I just think on your point about France have lost 10 out of 13 under Jacques Brunel. Ben Kay, in his column a week or so ago, talked about that the France-Wales game. And his assessment of it was that France are still... They've got an exciting back division who can pick off opportunities, they can feed off mistakes, they can play that sort of Jouet rugby in a broken field, but they cannot manufacture their own chances. They don't build pressure. I'm just looking at what he wrote. He said, in that game, in that first half even... He said France had no discernible game plan, no cohesion between the huge pack of forwards who wanted to do one thing and the back line who wanted to do something else. And I just go connect that to what you said at the start, Steve, about the reaction from Morgan Parra and Camilo Lopez to losing at Twickenham. They both came out after that game and said, France, by the way, have never had more time with their professional players than they have now because of a deal with the clubs. Parra said, we are wasting the time. We don't know what we're doing. Tactics-wise, we don't have a game plan. When in the first game, Vahamina had to be told he was captained by the referee. In the second game, when they had Pernod went off for a head injury assessment and Fiku was in the bin, the players didn't know how to respond, didn't know what they were doing. And so my feeling, how will France react? They will either feel some personal pride or they will think, we've got to get this guy sacked, and it'll end up spiralling.
Which they've got some history of.
Which they have history of doing,
yeah,
exactly.
And I give Vern Cotter the job now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's going really well.
Don't care.
He almost won a game the other week.
Don't care.
Montpellier.
Give him the job.
That's a roundup with those two.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, well, Ireland playing Italy on the Sunday, the day after the other two games. Just want to ask you all, really. Steve, Italy get a decent whack from all the Six Nations funding arenas. They only have to spend it on two pro teams, not any more than that. Are we getting a bit impatient now, and is it becoming a bit embarrassing? I know they've competed against the Wales almost second team. But now I tend to think, lads, we always support you as our second team. But hang on.
Yeah, interesting. I think the two provincial sides are starting to be a bit better, aren't they? I mean, I see Bennett and Teresa beat Scarlets, didn't they, the weekend?
And they're in a playoff position.
Yeah, you know, they're a lot more competitive in that Pro 14 league. How good that league is, that's another argument, isn't it? Yeah, it was interesting being out in Rome, actually, when Wales played that, and listening to Conor O'Shea afterwards. He does get a bit prickly, Conor, doesn't he? And it was put to him that Wales had played terribly, and he was most upset by that, saying, you know, he thought Italy had played really well. And he said, look, every time it looks as if we've done something decent, everybody says it was because the opposition were rubbish. Yeah. That was sort of the gist of his argument. But are they any good, really? I mean, that said it all for me, that Warren Gatland basically took his second team out there. They played absolutely terribly and they still won fairly comfortably, didn't they? That tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it?
Are we becoming impatient? Yes, I think yes we are. But I do think we have to recognise the role that Conor O'Shea has in Italy, which is more than just coaching the first team and picking the first team. More than any other, in fact, uniquely in the Six Nations, he's trying to run and get the entire Italian structure to work.
He's been performance director and coach.
Yeah,
right. That's his role.
Yeah, and so while he wants the national team to win, and we all want them to be competitive and winning, it's a much deeper issue that he's trying to solve. And my hope for him and for Italy is that the shoots of growth that we see in the two provincial teams will end up benefiting the national team. But are we getting impatient? Yes, we are.
How long do we wait for that?
Can I just ask you the financial question?
Yeah.
Is there any way financially that they could be discarded? And do we lose a lot if we go to a promotion of Georgia or someone like that?
I've heard some nonsense around over the years, and the one that really gets my goat is this one, the one you're implying, which is somehow we're going to go to promotion relegation in the Six Nations. Are you? Really? What are you going to do about the women's game then? We're going to have Six Nations women, because the Italian women's team are good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have Six Nations women and Five Nations men. That's pretty equal, and that's, you know. Are we serious about both genders, or are we not? Because you've got to do the same for both. Are we saying that Georgia are a stronger team? Well, Italy beat them.
Yeah, they beat them last
season. Okay, yeah. So all this, and thirdly, financially, Wales have only got to come last one year, or Scotland. Right, and this is England would be okay, and so would France. There's a lot of other revenue streams. Oh, all right, yeah. But the whole funding of the sport in both of those countries would collapse. All right, unless you're saying, oh, well, you can go down, but you keep the money. You know, it's just nonsense. And Italy, we let them in. It gets me angry. This, we let them in too late. Right, the golden era of Italian rugby was gone before we deigned to let them into the Five Nations, you know? How magnanimous of us, OK? And now, because... And the game went pro as well, and that didn't help either. They are making some deep-rooted structural reforms, which they did need to do. It is incredibly hard to reform a national union. Just ask Wales, right? And it's just nonsense. Okay. So, no, I'm not getting impatient. I'm getting impatient with people who don't see the big picture.
I think that's a fairly limited support there from Mark about the chances of a red. I think reading between the lines of what he said, he's not in favour of it.
Yeah, sorry about that. I get quite animated about that one.
Yeah, OK. No, we did you really? OK, fair enough. Chaps, just a brief different tangent now. You, the club team or your national team is supposed to be an amalgam of your club teams, and that's where you get the buzz from, and you come into the team full of beans, etc., and then you show what you can do at the top, very top level. On Saturday, the four Welsh regions all lost, or on the weekend, they all lost. It's becoming, in my opinion, although there was a great game between Cardiff and Glasgow,
it was a cracking game.
It is now becoming, hardly any of the players have developed a winning habit with anyone. The Ospreys against Ulster on Friday evening was absolutely abortion of sport and entertainment. Mark, we come to you first, as you're on good form.
Yeah.
It is grim. It's grim.
Yeah, this grieves me on a personal level because obviously I was brought up in this whole thing. The crowds are low. Even in the Heineken Cup, I don't quite buy this, if only we were in a different competition. You know, Racing, one of the glamour sides of Europe, came to Parky Scarlett in the autumn, and 8,000, 9,000? I don't quite believe that. I don't buy this, oh, regional rugby, it's killed it, it's all the rest. Because actually, take the side that's always been a regional side. Llanelli have always been the side of Carmarthenshire, Pembrokeshire, and to a degree Cardiganshire. Right, that hasn't changed.
And even North Wales. I mean, yeah, they've always taken place.
And they're doing marginally better than other what people would say were the artificial constructs of the other three teams. I think there's something more, and I should say I'm not there enough to be really sure about this. This is tentative, but the other small countries that do well in rugby, New Zealand, Ireland, even to a degree Australia, in there when they were strong, had really, really strong school systems. And I wonder, and this is just I don't know if this is right or wrong. I just throw it out there as an idea. I wonder whether. Because adult participation is dropping all over the world. Don't think we're going to go back to the days when every village produced three teams. That is not going to happen. Doesn't happen in England, doesn't happen in Ireland, won't happen in Wales. But if Wales is going to ever be a power in world rugby consistently at a number of levels, it has to produce a lot of players from a very, very small 2 million base with two very strong football teams in that market as well. And I don't know the answer, but it's not great.
Steve, you're closer to it than most people.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it goes to show how good a coach Warren Gatland is, because of the Wales squad he's got and the depth he's got in that Wales squad with the resources he's got. I think he's done a magnificent job. I mean, there are talks ongoing at the moment. There's this thing called Project Reset, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and there are a lot of rumours flying around in Wales about what that might bring. And, you know, there is talk that maybe they might focus on two regions and try and fund them more and try and get them more competitive in Europe. I don't know what you think about that, Steve.
Forget it. Turn off the lights.
Why?
Turn off the lights. Because every time, when you go down, if you have 12 teams, some of them will be rubbish. If you have four teams, at least one of them will be rubbish. If you have two teams, one of them will be rubbish. It doesn't work. And there's my four-word answer to the whole thing is Newport, Cardiff, Swansea, Llanelli. Full stop. Alex, can I just ask you... ask you a question. English club rugby, two games on the weekend. Are we witnessing a catastrophe in that Newcastle, the team that's come up and galvanised the division, and we're going to go there for the European Cup final and the Challenge Cup final, are we witnessing a possible catastrophe there? Because they really are detached at the bottom now.
I think catastrophe might be slightly overstating it, but it shows how well they did last season. I was actually talking to Toby Flood in the week just about what it's like playing in Cardiff, and he said that they're just so badly hit by injury. And one of the great, and we've seen it with England too, one of the things that really helped them last year was they weren't affected by injury. And this time, this season, they're really struggling. He talks about, you know, maybe he would say it, but Toby doesn't bullshit anyone. He said that the feeling and the spirit and everything is right at the club. They just can't handle the number of injuries that they've got. They don't have the squad depth of other clubs. So that's why they are where they are. And you know, would it be a huge blow to the league to lose Newcastle? Absolutely. They would be in a decent position to bounce straight back up into
just one. You can always avoid that catastrophe by not having relegation, Steve.
I think we've tried that. Oh, no, don't start him off.
No, March the 1st, I think, is the key date.
Okay.
Newcastle play Worcester at home on March the 1st.
One more thing.
They've got to win that.
My team that was going to come striding through, as I wrote last week, to dominate the latter stages was Sale, and they did really well. They only conceded a mere 67 points on Saturday.
That was an extraordinary result.
We're going to go on now, just finally, we're going to wrap up, and I want your brave predictions for the weekend, please, a winner and a number of points. Then I want your god and goddess of the week. I'm just introducing a special rule. They can be Tottenham Hotspur players this week. We're going to go along from Steve, Alex and Mark. Let's go Cardiff first, guys. Look, we don't even know what the teams are, so no one's going to berate us all afterwards much. But Steve, Wales, England?
Draw, 16-0.
16-0 draw?
Totally on the fence.
You can get 15-1 to that. Alex Lowe.
You tried that trick before and it worked.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, last Lions test in New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
Who on earth would have put that in the paper?
No, I know, they didn't. I know. Alex Lowe.
I'll say England 23-19.
England by 4. Mark Evans?
England by 15.
England by 15. We now go on to Paris, starting off with Steve. France, Scotland?
Yeah, I think France will win that. They'll be too powerful.
France will be too powerful.
21-15.
Okay, 6-point margin there. The Scots go west again. Alex?
Of my two scenarios that I posed earlier, I'm going to go with the French implosion.
French implosion?
Yeah,
right.
So Scotland to win by 7.
Okay.
Yeah, if Finn Russell's fit, Scotland by 5.
Okay. And finally, Ireland, Italy in Rome. Steve?
Ireland by 20.
20?
Yeah, Ireland bonus point win by plenty.
Ireland by 25.
Okay. Well, I've got England by only 3 points. I've got the Scotland, because you can't lose to France in the way they are at the moment. Scotland by 10, and I got Ireland by 30. God or goddess of the week? Anyone ready with one?
Yeah.
It's the key. Right, we're going over to Steve first.
I'll go with David James after that superb interview with Owen Slott. Terribly sad story. Yeah, I mean, he's been retired, I think, 10 years, hasn't he? From professional rugby and really struggling with
depression
and anxiety. I mean, he talked so candidly. It was a very, very moving interview. And David James, he's a top man, isn't he? He was a fine rugby player.
And a great player.
Did superbly well for the Lions, you know.
In 01, he was tremendous.
Probably underrated, you know. He's somebody you look back and think, you know, he was a damn fine player.
He was terrific. I think
thoughts and prayers with him and hope he can... Get through this.
That's difficult to. It won't be insensitive if you go for somewhere else, but I think we might come back to David in a minute. Alex?
Yeah, I'll nominate someone else only out of duty because he would get my vote. But so the other end of the scale, I'll go for the Harlequins marketing man for giving us all a chuckle this week by playing up to the stereotype of offering all Harlequins fans who drive a Maserati priority parking outside the stoop.
Okay. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's a great shot.
Maserati.
Priority parking. Blimey, they've probably only got about 40 people who have Maseratis, the Quins. Right, Mark, you should have brought that in when you were at Quins.
It's a great initiative, isn't it, Mark?
When you were in charge at Quins, where were people supposed to park their Maseratis? You never gave them anything.
We were going for a different market segment. Right, I'm great call on David. I mean, I coached David and signed him actually. Quins in the noughties. Song Heung-min from Tottenham, and our victory against Dortmund. Yeah. I know I shouldn't do it. It's very, very sort of self-indulgent, but it is such good fun being a Tottenham fan at the minute.
I think that is self-indulgent, actually. Okay. Mine's Jan Vertonghen, by the way, who was brilliant, completely out of position.
Brilliant.
Okay, I think our God of the Week, quite rightly, is David James, and let's wish him all the best. He's a great man, That's the sort of stories we should be doing, and I'm glad the Times did it. Boys, I wish you, Steve James, Alex Lowe, Mark Evans, a fantastic weekend. Thank you for your thoughts today. And one final thing, there's two wrecks this week. There's this one, the first wreck, and then on Thursday, it's just Sam Warburton all on his own, well, with me, talking about missing the game, talking about Wales-England. That's out on Thursday, so two wrecks for the price of one. And in fact, it's free anyway, so there's no price. Thanks for downloading us. Keep us posted, and we'll be back with you.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.